Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Hey, Power Athlete Radio listeners, I want to welcome you to another banging podcast. I'm John Wellborn, and I'm joined today by Dr. Ben Skutnik, and we got a doozy today. We are coming in, and I'm going to give you the title straight up, which I usually don't do when I do my intros, but I'm going to give it to you. It's Hammer 90, GLP-1s, 16 Weeks of Hungry, and the Sugar Cut. So this is going to be a exciting one, and we're going to pack a lot in, but we're really excited to jump into Hammer 90, which was a program that we used a while back where we used it to really build community. So we've kind of gone in a different direction, and Ben and I have been field testing this Hammer 90 for just over 90 days. And like anything, we got a lead from the front. So we took on Hammer 90. We decided to field test it, get the results, see how everything's going before we pushed it out to the larger world and the larger Power Athlete Nation. And so you're going to see this come through in your inbox. But I was going to bring Ben on the podcast just to talk a little bit about Hammer 90, what the program is, how we're going to do it, the body comp, the mental discipline, and really the accountability piece. But also we'll get into a little bit of what it means to be hungry. And then I want to review a little bit on the podcast that we launched recently with Jay Campbell, where we were talking about GLP-1s and the sugar cut. It sparked up a lot of questions on the Discord and just a lot of questions in general. So I wanted to kind of get through that a little bit and figured nobody better than Dr. Ben Skutnik. Welcome.
What's up?
Ooh.
What's up, John?
I was listening to all that enthusiasm.
Man, no, I'm actually very excited, but any of our Discord members know this is, it's like, just going to rehash some stuff that we just ran through in there, I'm sure. But no, I am excited. Very excited to talk about Hammer 90. Very excited to talk about the last 90 days where we have suffered together in hunger. And then, yeah, you know, talk a little bit about that GLP-1 podcast because I just listened to it again. And I think there's some good stuff there. I think there's some stuff that maybe I would give pause to as well. So yeah, I'm excited, man.
You know, the GLP-1s are interesting. And, you know, obviously, Jay Campbell comes on the podcast and this is his business. This is what he does. He does peptides. And, you know, for him, it's like everything looks like a hammer. You know, when when you're a car, you know, when you break rocks, everything's a hammer. So for him, peptides are, you know, how he feeds his family, how he does everything. And he's kind of like found like works what works best for him. But he also admittedly came into it with a bodybuilding background. So he had a lot of the skills in place. And one of the questions that I always go back to is like, is this something I'm on forever? You think about hormone replacement, and part of the reason that we recommend for most people when they're, you know, thinking about doing TRT or hormone replacement is to work with somebody like Americ Health or one of these groups that can get your blood work and maybe pull some levers that will maximize your own production and make you a healthier version so that you don't necessarily have to go on exogenous testosterone, because once you kind of go down that road, you're not really coming off of it. And, you know, after you, let's say you've had your kids and whatnot, but like, I'm always a little bit apprehensive when I'm told like, you'll be on this forever, you know, like, you know, like, let's say within like the cancer fight, you know, somebody gets diagnosed and the doctors are like, you know, we just need to keep this at bay. So you're going to do chemo indefinitely just because we're trying to keep you alive. Like there's no finish line for a lot of these things. And I don't know, that's just medicating a problem. So not to say this isn't right, but just when somebody says to me, oh, you'll be on this forever, like, well, what if I decide I don't want to take it? Or what happens if the government bans it or there's a you know, zombie apocalypse and I can't get my GLP-1s anymore? And now all of a sudden I'm, you know, not prepared for the zombie apocalypse because I haven't taken my medication, which I think will happen to everybody anyway if the zombie apocalypse comes. But I really want to start with Hammer 90. So what sets Hammer 90 apart from other training programs? I mean, we have Jack Street, we have Field Strong, we have this team training model, but what sets Hammer 90 apart? And specifically, how are we going to target body composition, mental discipline, and accountability? And I think we know what levers to pull because we've pulled them pretty good for the mass collective of guys that have been following it on the back end.
Yeah. The big differentiator is really going to be on that community side. And, you know, we have the Discord now. So if you're in any of the training programs, you can be on the Discord, and there's a good community across programs in that. But the beauty, I think, of Hammer 90 is it's a smaller group, which forces an exclusivity, but also forces a little bit more, how do I say, like presence from each individual, right? So we have however many thousands of people following the programs, but on the Discord, you know, there's probably, you know, 100 or so regular inputs, right? Different people getting on there. And then otherwise it's like a one-off or so of people coming in asking for movement substitutions or things like that. But with Hammer 90, it's going to be a set group. So 30 people plus myself. And then I'm going to help, we're going to onboard a couple new nutrition coaches throughout it as well. So a real tight knit group, which is going to force that community aspect, that interaction, which then it much like we've seen doing it on the back end with a few of us, I believe that forced interaction where you can't really hide forces compliance, right? Because then it's like, man, they can see me. I'm not just like a number. I'm not just a name. But they know they're following me. And so that's the big thing. The training is also, you know, it's going to be a separate program. That's the one that we've been testing. So I can say firsthand that this training is legit. Like it's pretty, I'll say pretty potent training. But then also we're going to kind of melt a little bit of a, like an educational aspect to it. So every week we're going to do within the group, we're going to host a Zoom call and then we'll record it for the group. So if you can't make it, not a big deal, but we'll do a little bit of question and answer there. But also each week I'm going to try and instill little like micro habits that you can stack along the way. Cause the goal of this, yeah, 90 days, we want to lose some weight. We want to get shredded, all that. But the real goal is learn these things in these 90 days, this like 90 day intensive, and then carry the habits throughout. So you don't just gain whatever weight back or kind of fall back to what you were beforehand. So those educational pieces will also be kind of a integral part of it.
So how important is the accountability piece in Hammer 90 when we get deep into the tougher phases? I know for our cut in the beginning, everybody kind of made like a, it was like the first 4 weeks, everybody made pretty decent progress. And then there was like this dark day where all of a sudden you're stepping on and like, you know, you might be up a pound, down a pound, and like this kind of linear progression of weight loss just kind of stalled. And then all of a sudden it was kind of like, we're in this dark days. And then all of a sudden everybody kind of caught up to the same place. And then we hit the wall where everybody was like, man, I have been eating my calories. I've been getting all my work done. I've been doing everything. And I've just kind of stalled out and hit a bit of a ceiling. And or not a ceiling, just really just a bit of a wall. And then from there, it was just constant with like, hey, just keep doing what you're doing. We know this is going to work. We're going to break through. We're going to break through. And then, you know, while some people were looking to pull the ripcord and I haven't lost and this, and we're going back and forth, the guys that stayed consistent and just said, hey, you know what? I'm going to keep moving the dirt. I'm going to keep moving this right direction. Those are the ones that smashed through. And, you know, now we're 2 weeks out and pretty easy within striking distance. I'm like, you know, probably one meal and one stomach flu away from, you know, hitting my number. I just need to lose a few pounds, which I'll be more than happy to do. But it felt like very, very non-linear. And I think sometimes with weight loss, we think about like, oh, if I cut 300 to 500 calories and I exercise and I do this, then, you know, all of a sudden I'm going to be in a caloric deficit. And everybody makes it seem so easy, calories in, calories out. And, you know, this law of thermodynamics, everything is very simple. But when you get into it and you realize that there's some hormonal stuff, I mean, like one of the things was getting on me was I was getting into the sauna too many days in a row. I ended up doing the sauna for 30 days. And I was packing all of this fluid. I just had like this weird kind of like my hands were swollen. I couldn't get my wedding ring on. I couldn't wear my Oura ring anymore. And, you know, I called Doc Parsley and I'm like, man, I'm packing all this fluid. And he's like, it's too much stress. You know, you're training, you're doing all your aerobic work, you're eating less calories. And that stress that you're putting in, especially with the heat, just might be too much. So I cut it back to 3 days a week and it was fine. So having somebody to reach out to like us and the coaches to be able to guide you through this and allow you the confidence to stay the course, I think is so fundamental. If time is the enemy, Grindstone is your weapon. It's the most flexible training program in the power athlete arsenal. Built for boardroom warriors, sleep-deprived parents, students burning the candle, and athletes with their axe to the grindstone. Grindstone delivers high-impact strength training with minimal time demands. So when life gets chaotic, your progress doesn't fall apart. Consistent, efficient, built to keep you strong, lean, and resilient, no matter what's on your plate. Claim your 7-day free trial at powerathletehq.com/grindstone and take the fight to Father Time.
Yeah, I mean, that accountability, I think, is what makes this doable. And for me, even, it's stretched beyond our group of guys because my wife started like checking me as well. Because I would be, you know, 8:30 would roll around. It's like, man, I kind of want a sweet treat. And she'd be like, you serious? You're going to do it? And it's like, okay, like, thank you. But no, I think that's it because, yeah, man, the first, you know, whatever, 20 pounds, kind of you're excited, like it was working. But then like for me, I hit that 225 mark and it's like, I'm doing everything I can. And it just wasn't happening. And so if I was left to my own devices, I could have easily said, hey, you lost 20 pounds. This is good. Like you can walk away happy. You're looking good, feeling good. But you know, even you and I were on the phone the other day and you were like, I don't know, man, I just want to be done. And it's like, no way, man. Like we got it. Yeah. Like but I think it's nice just being able to say that.
Yeah.
Right. And
yeah.
Like telling people like, man, I just want to stop because then it's like, no, like we can't, like we come too far.
Well,
so yeah.
You're just like you, on Sunday, you know, I was out at Jared Allen's, induction into the NFL Hall of Fame in Canton. So I flew home on Sunday and, the kids, finished up all the stuff that they had to do. And so Kate took them out for ice cream and they didn't get any ice cream to go. Usually they'll get like a pint to go if dad's not there and they'll put it in the freezer and whether or not they eat it or not, like the kids kind of just like, you know, pilfer it. And I came home and like had when I was driving back from Canton to Columbus, cause I went out early to go do Dave Tate's podcast, the Table Talk. Yeah. And, which was a fucking whole other adventure. 4 hours later, I don't know, either Dave might be one of the best conversationalists or one of the loneliest men or a combination of both. You know, at about the hour 45 mark, having done this podcast for as long, I start getting like a little bit of like spider sense where I'm like, man, okay, we're running a little bit long. All of a sudden his dude put up like the 60 minute card, put up like the 120, put up the 180. And all of a sudden we're at like, you know, and then at 180, he's like, hey, I got to take a bathroom break. And I was like, are we still going to go? He's like, yeah, I figured we'd go a little bit longer. All of a sudden that dude like started waving his hands at like 240 or 235. And I was like, I got here at like 10:30 and now it's 2:30. And hey. I was super hungry because I I stopped and I got a coffee and I was like, you know what, we'll go for a little bit and I'll find some lunch place. He's in like London, Ohio, down like a back road that you make a right and go over rocks and bricks. I mean, like, I was like, where the fuck am I? And I didn't know where to stop to eat, so like I got a little panicky, stopped at Starbucks and got like apples, fruit, and two eggs, and like house two of those. I get there, I drink the coffee, and I'm like, you know, there's no snacks, there's no food, there's nothing. And so, but on the drive home, I couldn't find anything from, you know, Ohio, like Canton, Akron area to Columbus. So I ended up like finding some little eggs place and went in there and I got like 5 poached eggs, one piece of sourdough and 1 chicken sausage. And like the lady was like looking at me, these people are eating these like enormous pancakes and all this other shit. I'm like, yeah, poached eggs. And then the hilarious part was I put it on like the sourdough to eat it and like it dripped and I'm like licking my plate and this poor lady's probably like, this guy's a fucking weirdo. But, you know, I mean, and so then I got to the airport, there's nothing to eat in the airport. Drink a bunch of element salt and just basically just be angry, hungry. And then I got home and, thank God Kate had cooked some dinner, for me. But like, and then if that ice cream had been in there, it would have gotten eaten, but thank God it wasn't because she was looking out for me.
Yeah. No, the only hard part right now my wife is getting really good at making sourdough. So she's trying all these new, like all the, and it's just like, it's like, I literally will hold off like 10, if I know she's baking a loaf of something that day, I'll hold off like 10 grams of carbs just so I can like try that at the end of the day. And
so this is how you guys have, this is how I know you guys have moved positions on the spectrum of, what do you say, like political standing. So all of a sudden, when the woman starts baking sourdough, people tend to like move to the right a little bit.
Yeah.
So you guys are like far on the left, like revolutionary, you know, like I'm a raw fruit vegan ready to take over the world, you know, burn the anarchy and the patriarchy. And then your wife starts baking sourdough and you're like, next thing you know, you're voting Republican.
Dude, we, you know, we had a homestead before we got this house. So we were there. But yeah, man, no, the sourdough is the only, like, that's my Achilles heel right now. You know, we make smash burgers once a week. It's kind of a family thing. And so she's been making sourdough bread that we've been toasting on the Blackstone for that. And,
sounds amazing.
But otherwise, like the funny thing is, there was, I don't know about you, like we talk about the hunger. There was a gap there, probably like the middle, like 4 or 5 weeks where it was like, man, like I want to eat everything. I'm going to bed hungry. I'm going to bed because I'm hungry and I can't stand it anymore. Mm-hmm. But really these last few weeks, the hunger's there still, but it's kind of just like an annoyance. Mm-hmm. Like I'm almost inoculated to it where it's just like, I'm hungry. But again, I think through the habits of, you know, that we've built over the last few months, it's like, I'm just hungry and that's just what it is. And you know, so it's been really interesting because I know when you were talking, on that last podcast, when we talk about like GLP-1s, not to jump ahead, but people talk about like the food noise and it's like, well, I almost have like hunger noise, but now it's just noise. Like it's been going on for so long that I almost don't notice it.
For me, it's the taste in my mouth. Like I have metal mouth taste all the time. Like I'm sucking on pennies.
That's true. I'm drinking a ton of like Waterloos and LaCroix.
Yeah.
Like that's, yeah. You know, yeah, no, I don't just drink straight water anymore.
I have this weird kind of metallic-y taste. But for me, and I know this isn't universal for everybody, so don't take it as that. For me, I know if I'm not hungry, I'm not really burning fat. I think that that's like the body's trigger. You know, when I'm in caloric deficit, we're training, we're lifting weights, we're doing everything that's required. Like my hunger and like I ate this food, but I'm still hungry. Like I did my aerobic work today and then got up and had, it was rice and then chicken, which sounds awful. Right. And,
I just ate that literally before I jumped on.
So it was 12 ounces. And then, I think it was like, 8 or 9 ounces of rice. And as I'm eating, I'm still hungry. Like I got done and I was like, I can't believe I just ate that meal and I'm still hungry. And so I know that's actually a good thing for me because I know that's like has me within the fat burning. And I know that the training is going well just for the fact that like all I'm PRing all of my lifts, which makes absolutely no sense. We were doing slight dumbbell inclines and I went over and I hadn't breaking out the 130s and in a while and ended up hitting that for a pretty easy set of like 7-8 reps. So yeah. And then, ended up hitting 12, almost 13. I'll call it 12 and three quarters with, 60 pounds around my neck and then 20 pounds between my waist. So 80 pounds total on the weighted dips. So to be able to do, you know, almost 13 reps with 80. So I ended up doing, you know, a few body weight and then I did 20 pounds, 40 pounds, 60 pounds. And then I threw on and I was like, all right, let me do an extra. I'm feeling strong. Threw 80 on, you know, put. Part of the problem is I use chains. So I can get like three chains around my neck. And then the fourth one, I just have to strap on my waist and ended up hitting it pretty easy. Because what happens is if I get more than 60 pounds on my neck and chain, it starts kind of fucking with my balance. And then I get to pitch too far forward and it just, so I got to put one between the waist. But PRing all the lifts, which makes no sense. I wonder if the PRing of the lift comes from the amount of aerobic work. And I think the interesting thing that, you know, we've been using Joel Jameson's Morpheus and we use the MAP method, especially with this like 180 minus your age kind of target for me, which is a 131. But, you know, the Morpheus goes up to like 149 for my recovery stuff. So I try to keep it in like a 120, 121 on the low side, 145 on the high side. And I kind of just keep within that for 30 minutes. And I wonder if I do know, because last week, before I left to go to Canton, I went over with Victor and Philippe, and we went over and trained with Nikki Rod and the B team and Nikki Ryan those guys, you know, prepping Victor for CGI, and ended up having a 10-minute round with Nikki Rod, and you know, was not gassed in any way. So my conditioning was pretty good. And then the next round we got into doing a bunch of leg locks, and I wanted to like watch those guys who are really good leg lockers. I wanted to like watch what they did. So I ended up sitting out around just to kind of observe, because it's very rare that you get to see guys that are you know, that good at leg locks. And then I actually had Nikki show me his body lock passing. So there was lot of really cool. I mean, that's what he's known for, the body lock pass. So I was like, man, show me the body lock pass. Like, show me the nuance. And so we got into, you know, like long arm, short arm, angles, head, look at this. And it was dope, man, because I've been showed it before. And it was funny because Victor and Philippe, as we were leaving, is like, what, Shanji hasn't shown you that a million times? And I'm like, he has. But like the way that he, like all of the little pieces were really interesting. And and so, yeah, I'm going to add that in. But yeah, like my conditioning feels fucking great. And I am surprised that being in a deficit the way that we are, leaning out, doing everything, and I'm down also like 17 pounds, that to PR all my lifts just means that carrying that excess body fat is doing nothing for performance. The removing of the fat, I mean, the systemic inflammation reduction, just for the fact that in the morning I like shoot out of bed like somebody kicked me in the ass.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the most, I mean, obviously aesthetically things have changed, so I noticed that. But yeah, just, it's like a, there was just like a, not a fog, like a brain fog, but just, it took longer to warm up and things like that. And now, I mean, now I can roll out to the garage at like 4:30 in the morning and get right into it. Like, I don't have to kind of rev myself up. So I do think a lot of that is just from dropping the fat. It's just non-functional tissue, right? And nothing but inflammation and things like that. I also think the PRing again is kind of part of the, due to the accountability, because I'll have, you know, Pollock and I kind of work out at the same time. And so depending on where we are in the workout, we'll see the other person's weight on the Train Heroic leaderboard. And like just last week, I think I did, doing those Bulgarians, I bumped up to 65s, and he like immediately shot me a text. He's like, fucking 65s. I was like, yeah, man, I like went for it today. He's like, Jesus, I'm sitting over here with 45s in my hand, just struggling. And then, you know, then I look at the scoreboard and it's like, he bumped it up. So again, it, you know, back in the day, it used to be you had a group and you have, you know, the Brazilians that come over, or you and Arash still train and stuff, but a lot of us are training on our own. Yep. And I don't think we realized how important it was just to have somebody to, you know, shoot the shit with, or, you know, kind of give jabs at each other. I mean, cause it just brings spirits up in a moment when you're deep in a deficit like this, dude, spirits can be low really easily. So like, to make it fun, I think is important. And that comes from the interaction, you know? And so I think it is interesting PRing everything. I also think it's part of the equation of like, man, if you've lost 15, 20 pounds, that's 15 less pounds that your body weighs that you can put on the barbell, you know? Or like if you're doing dips, like you were saying, if you're doing dips and you lost 15 pounds, well, that's another set of chains, you know? So, that kind of math works its way as well.
Yeah, no, it, I have crafted this theory, and I don't know if there's any basis to it. I'm sure there is, and we could probably go find the research. But I mean, for years we've said on the podcast, muscle's extremely insulin sensitive, fat's oxidative, and the more fat you carry, the more systemic inflammation you're going to have. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, as you age, if things like arthritis and some of these other issues become much more prevalent when you carry a high amount of body fat consistently. So I know that dropping the body fat, it like just like no ache anywhere in my body. And it's an interesting thing, because, you know, you have aches and pains, you know, some of the issues maybe within the knee, like within my shoulder, like everything feels better than it's ever felt. And the only thing I could think of, it's been a while since I've been this low in body fat, and probably since we did 22 Jack Street, you know. Yeah. And you know, I ended up, you know, winning that at you know, 268 at like seven, you know, I was right around 7.8, you know, sub 8% body fat for in the bod pod. So that was measured. And I remember I felt great. The problem that I ran into was I didn't have a plan for week 23.
Yeah.
So we got done. And then the next day we ended up taking the kids away for Easter. And, you know, we went on vacation and had some margaritas and ate out and ate sushi and just did stuff. And I didn't really have like an end game in place. Like, hey, I want to see how, you know, obviously I'll put a little bit of, you know, like, you know, to stay somewhere in that 10 to 12%. And, you know, can I keep somewhere around this 265, 270? And I think it was really easy to kind of like, oh, get back to like 280s and, you know, lose some, you know, fat and, or, you know, body composition. And that was one. And, you know, there's been times within that last amount of time that I've gone through and kind of leaned out and we've done some mm-hmm. things, but nothing to this degree. And I think the reason being is just the competitive nature and the community aspect. Like we,
yeah.
you know, we put out a general program that everybody had to kick in some dough. And then we set up a Discord, had a, you know, I wrote a mission statement, had a plan. This is what we're going to do. These are the end games. This is how, you know, you get to the final. And that piece, I think adding all those things were, you know, obviously we needed, but really just trying to figure out the pieces of Hammer 90 so that when we push it out to the world and the, you know, the people that are listening to this and the people that follow the training programs, there's going to be something pretty dope for them to follow.
Yeah. And I think part of it too was the, we all, because what, there's 7, 8 of us, right? And we all individually were able to like look in the mirror and be like, yeah, man, I got to lean out. Like, you know, we weren't pushing 30% or whatever, but it's like, I know what I can be and I've just been soft on myself.
Yeah.
And so like that initial admittance of like, you know, I got to tighten it up, and having this group of other people who are also at that point where it's like, I know what I can do and I haven't been doing it, you know, that kind of self-checking, self-accountability to kick it off. I think that made it nice too, because then that kind of set the tone where it's like, you know, well, I remember, I think one of the days I did my conditioning in the morning instead of lifting, and you shot a message on the Discord and you're like, what, you're giving up lifting now? And it's like, just stuff like that, where it's like, no, man, like just changed it up, but holding each other accountable. Because it's like, hey, we all, you know, it's almost like we entered this like silent agreement where it's like, we all are going to do this. So do it, right? Because I don't want to, a lot of the times when I'm feeling like, you know, on the fence about it or whatever, like, oh, I don't know if I want to get out there, blah, blah, blah. More often than not, it's like, yeah, but Arash and John are doing it. I know Pollock's out there doing it. So like, I got to do it because they're doing it, you know, and I don't want to be that guy who's in the group who just kind of did it.
Yeah.
You know?
No, you would never live that down. I mean,
exactly.
This whole thing really started with our good friend, Zach Ebenesh. And unfortunately, you know, due to injury and some of the other things he had going, you know, Zach has not been able to kind of pull the trigger the way that he wanted to. I mean, I'm on a daily text message with him and Pollock, and you know, Pollock is like, hey man, I get up and I you know, I get on the incline and walk for 30 minutes. It's been great for me. And I think, you know, Zach's knee and back has been bugging him. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was like, dude, I think, you know, if you can't train the way that you want, it's hard to train into a deficit. You're going to have to eat in the deficit. And he's like, yeah, but I feel like shit when I under eat. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
We all,
I do too. And, yeah. And, it just, you kind of have to like, you know, put on a playlist, lift, drink some coffee, you know, funnel a little bit of anger and just kind of power through it. But I will say dropping the body fat and feeling good. And also it was nice to go to, Canton for the Hall of Fame deal and show up and see people. And then I'll go to dinner and have people be like, God damn, dude, you're in fucking good shape. And, no. You know, cause most of the time when you see guys, they go the other way.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I was there and, you know, ran into some of the guys that I played against who have gone the other way, and to show up in shape and have people be like, fuck dude, you're looking good. That was the type of, you know, feather in the cap I needed. So, I think it worked out multiple ways. I mean, one, obviously that, but also, man, I feel good and I'm excited. And, I'm excited to have everybody sense this change and really get on board with it.
Yeah. And I think that last point, like for whatever reason, the vanity side of things is kind of poo-pooed these days. Like you're kind of like an asshole if you're trying to go for the aesthetics. But fuck, man. Like, it does feel good. Like, catching myself in the mirror, like when I wake up and it's just like, damn, like I fucking look good. Like that mentality, you know, whether it's your ego or whatever, it's just like, that's a great way to start the day, because the opposite is a shitty way to start the day.
Yeah. Like, where you're like, oh, I'm fat. I look old. I'm tired.
Yeah,
these
love handles. I can't, like, yeah. Oh my God. But now it's like, I fucking look good. Like I'm happy with this. And so it kind of gets the ball going, you know?
So I knew that I was pretty deep in this thing where I wear 38s on for shorts, and mm-hmm. I had to throw a belt on the 38s now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the only downside, is like, I got to fucking buy some new clothes now.
Like, yeah. You know, no, I mean, like, I'm like, dude, I forgot the belt on these, and I'm like pulling them up, and I'm like, the fact that I'm having to belt up 38s is pretty good. I mean, that's pretty legit. But yeah, man, it was nice to go out and see everybody and, like, you know, feel, you know, pretty good. But the joke, what was funny, when I rolled with Nicky Rod, he's like, how old are you? And I told him, he's like, damn, I would have never guessed that. And I was like, well, how many dudes, you know, my age? He's like, none, they're all dead. And I was like, all right. And he's like, you look like your age in reverse. I'm like, I'll take it. Thank you. So that was fun. Yeah. All right. So I think we got the mission laid out, but can you walk us through a little bit of the structure? Like, how does this thing evolve over from week one to, you know, week 12 plus?
Yeah. So, you know, the website guys have done a really good job putting together this really slick kind of web app. So it's all centralized there, training, nutrition. We got some cool stuff so individuals can see in terms of tracking how their nutrition's going. Cause like you said, when we did it, like, weight loss initially was great and then it plateaued. So we're going to be able to kind of visualize all that, which makes it a little bit easier to handle. So all that's going to be going on. But then within that also, each week we're going to have within the challenge kind of micro challenges, mm-hmm. right? And those are going to kind of be weaved into those educational components. So like I mentioned, each week we're going to have these Zoom meetings where we talk about, like, almost like a theme. Like, each week has like a theme, and those themes and those Zooms are to help build the habits and kind of stack the habits along the way. So initially we'll talk about, like, the really, what we'll call, like, big rocks, right? Like, okay, this week, write down a shopping list. And, you know, for some people it's like, well, no duh, but it's like, hey, a lot of people, they go to the fucking store and they just kind of wing it. And that's when they end up buying all sorts of stuff. So it's like, plan your shopping list. But then as we go along, it'll be more kind of nuanced, smaller rocks that, like, hey, if, you know, as long as we got the big rocks in place, we're going to see a lot of progress. These small rocks are just kind of like the icing on the cake. And those are kind of the real, you know, we can talk about, like, not necessarily getting good sleep, but like what are you going to do the half hour before sleep? Like, things like that. And so, throughout the course of the 12 weeks or the 90 days, we're going to build all those things up. So hopefully, again, like you mentioned, when day 91 hits, it's not just like, all right, I'm going to nuke all this progress and go back to what I'm doing. You know, like, by then you will have a new lifestyle. Cause that's really, when we talk about nutrition, and I tell all my clients this as well, when people think about nutrition, they think immediately like macros and meal planning, but it's like, nutrition is just lifestyle management. It just happens to be the aspect of your lifestyle that's, like, most easily managed, mm-hmm. but it's really just a vehicle for us to manage all the stresses of your life, and kind of get a handle on all that. And so really, when we talk about Hammer 90, yes, it's a nutrition challenge and training program, but really it's like a lifestyle challenge or like a lifestyle transformation program. And so over the course of those 90 days, that will be the goal, is that people make those changes, and maybe not all of them stick, but the reality is if some of them stick, you're still going to be better on the other side. But then also, because it's just 30 of us, hopefully we build kind of more of a longer lasting connection, right? So we make some connections here, day 91 hits. It's not like Stand By Me where we all scatter, right? Sure. Like, hey, we're still all here, still in the normal Discord. So check in on each other, and things like that. So that's kind of the nuts and bolts of it. I'm really excited about the web app because it is super cool. What Kyle and Harry and those guys have gone put together. So I think that'll be awesome as well.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's it's cool because we can deliver kind of a more boutique experience with the nutrition and all that other stuff. So, in which we designed just specifically for this little challenge, which I think would be a lot of fun. And then it just allows us to get just more granular and be able to, you know, use the Discord and have people in it. So I'm very excited for it. So with that signed, sealed, and delivered, you'll be getting an email. You'll see us kind of bang this stuff out and we'll see if we can move forward. And I'm excited to get started with Hammer 90. So let's jump into.
And I should say that I will probably not be doing the nutrition because I don't know if I'll have another 20 pounds to lose, but myself and the two other coaches I'm bringing on, we're absolutely going to be doing the training with you guys or with whoever jumps on it, which I think that, like we've talked about, is very important. The walking the walk and looking the part and doing the things. I mean, that's important as well. So it's not just going to be us standing in our ivory tower shouting down to you. Like, we're going to be doing it with you. Maybe I'll keep trying to go. The collective is in about 90 more days, right? So I could show up to the collective at 205 and put David McKercher to shame.
Yeah, a lot of shame coming with that one. But, I don't know. I mean, I've kind of been kind of wrestling with, like, what is the next part of this look like? And I'll probably go back to a little bit of maintenance. And then I think I'm going to try to continue with this cut. I was looking at some guys online that, are kind of in that space. And I was like, you know what? Like, I don't know how realistic it is being that lean for that long. I mean, those guys seem to do it, but I'm sure, you know, peptides and drugs and a lot of other things are at play in there. But I wonder how feasible it is to, you know, be a 200 and, you know, plus pound athlete. You know, obviously I'm well over 200 pounds, but to be like a bigger dude like I am and to be able to walk around, you know, around that 10%, which I feel like would be kind of fun to do.
The post scans that we're going to get in a couple weeks, that'll be a big tell for me. Because if, depending on where that is, if it's, you know, I figure if it's 12%, well, sure, I'll keep going and try and get down to 8%, right? Like, it's interesting because I think about like MMA a lot and like UFC, and it's like, okay, 6'3", 205 is what I would be. And like trying to look at like the fighters that are at that weight, and it's like, that's when they weigh in at 6'3", 205 on the scales, they look like skeletons. Oh, like, I want to look like a skeleton?
Dude, yeah. Yeah, but that's looking at like the NFL guys and kind of, let's say like, I think Travis Kelce is like 6'5", but the guys that are 6'3", you know, safeties, kind of outside backers, 225. I ran into Ben Lieberman. He was pretty big, you know, pretty fit now too. So I think being able to be, you know, 6'3", 215, 220 is probably pretty good. I think Arash is like what, 6'3", 240? Which he looks like a fucking stick figure now. I mean, Arash like is so skinny to the point where I was like, wow, I didn't think that would look the way that it did. I kind of you don't realize like how big a dude he is until all of a sudden he gets to, you know, 6'3", 240 and looks like a stick figure.
Well, and that's the thing. And he's done a huge change over the last year, but I say this with all respect, but he posted a picture of him when he was back in California doing judo, and it's almost comical how big he was compared to what he is
now. 360.
Yeah. It's like literally like almost cartoonish. And it's like, man, like that's, I talk about how good it feels to drop 20 pounds. Like he's dropped like 100+ pounds. It's like, geez, he must be feeling great. So yeah, he's been crushing it, doing this.
Yeah. So, all right. So now that we have signed, sealed, and delivered and talked enough about Hammer 90, the rest of the podcast was GLP-1, 16 weeks of hungry, and a sugar cut. So we talked about the 16 weeks hungry. So let's get into a little bit. You listened to the podcast we did with Jay Campbell, which was a little outside the norm of what you've seen on Power Through Radio. What I was excited about was one, extremely passionate dude, kind of wacky, good podcast, good energy. I really, really liked him as a person. And just the fact that the guy's out on the fringe and, doing something that's a little bit different. And my only reservations came from something that we've actually received within the Discord, where now he makes everything seem like the GLP-1s and the peptides are so easy. They're so safe. Everybody should on them and live on them forever. And one of the, I guess you could say one of the stumbling points that we ran into on the Discord was that, you know, people believe that, you know, hey, these are just a miracle drug. And they are, you know, I mean, for people like the greatest risk factor for all-cause mortality in this country is going to be obesity. So sure. Now we have a drug that can combat this, but I do think that before everybody jumps on these so cavalier, there needs to be some education. They need to first address the root behavior and create some good habits so that this isn't something that they just have to live on for the rest of their life. And they, you know, and then once they do the, you know, lift weights and they have like a system in place, I think adding it in makes more sense. But I'm nervous that people aren't creating these systems, that they aren't doing the hard like root change behavior work that needs to be done before going on them.
Yeah. You know, and like what was mentioned in the Discord is the people draw the equivalence to like insulin for type 1 diabetics. And it's like, that's not a one for one. Like insulin for a type 1 diabetic is, and as you know, right, is literally a life source. Yeah. Like that's where that is. You could be as strict on the Bernstein protocol as you want. You could be doing everything, but like that, they need that. For sure, this is now to say there are definitely people who have exhausted all means of other lifestyle changes and things like that. And the GLP-1s are the best approach for them, right? But to make that equivalence of what insulin is to type 1 diabetics, that's a false equivalence. And this is kind of where I get tripped up, not so much in the should people use them or not, but the arguments that people make. And you know, as a rhetoric major, it's like there's a lot of fallacies baked into these arguments that we just don't know to be true, right? It's almost like a case of the noble lie where, you know, could it be beneficial? Absolutely. But you're saying it with such matter of factness and such authority and such certainty, but the truth is we don't quite know for sure yet. And then, yeah, like you've mentioned, while there are people who it is absolutely necessary for them where they are and the things that they have tried and have not found success with, there are also people who are kind of like using them as like a cheat code, right? I think about it. So being a 90s kid growing up with a Nintendo, in Super Mario 3, you got like this flute and you could warp to like World 5 and then World 8, like you could warp through the whole game. That's kind of what this is for some people, for the people who maybe are just sitting at 18, 20% body fat, have a hard time holding themselves accountable. It's kind of like that warp for them. Whereas in my mind, and you could say this is, you know, I have a bias because I am a nutrition coach, but in my mind, there should be steps before that that test your ability to make adaptive change without the drugs. And that's simply because, again, no shame on the drugs. There are people who need it. You know, Bree wrote that great piece about her journey with it in our blog, like for sure. But what I loved about her piece is what came before that was she exhausted literally every other option. She tried doing it herself. She hired a coach. She got the gastric surgery. She tried all those other things and then got to that point and they've been a lifesaver for her. That's awesome. That's a very compelling story. And that's a very awesome story to hear. But my kind of objection to what, like they were saying on the podcast about everybody should get on it, it's like, well, then you're selling yourself short. And like, yeah, it does suck. There are parts of a weight loss journey that suck and that you wish you could just fast forward through. But the journey through those difficult times are what make you a more resilient person. And then what I always come back to is then that frees up your bandwidth, because really that's my perception, at least from working with as many people as I have worked with. It's a bandwidth thing. The people who are most successful right now, I have a client, her name's Anna. I'm going to give her a shout out. She is just crushing it, on her weight loss journey. But she is doing so well because she has created her life where she has this bandwidth to do these hard things. They're moving.
Give me an example.
Her chiropractic.
Oh, okay.
So Anna is, she lives up in Chicago area, but they're moving to Colorado because her husband just got a new job. She's a chiropractor. So she has to sell her practice. They have to sell her house. Her husband is already out there. So she's kind of doing this thing on her own. So super stressful, but she was also in her college years, a pretty high level distance runner. So she has years and years of doing hard things and facing hard things so that now I tell her all the time when we have our check-ins, it's like, you're making my job really easy, because it's just like, I feel more like I'm just here to chat about stuff. Like, hey, you just want to talk? Let's talk. Because she's able to take things and run with them so well. But she has had, like I said, decades of practice of doing those hard things. Not everybody has had those opportunities. Not everybody has been presented with times where they've had to do that. And so then when they come up against something like weight loss, it can easily seem insurmountable, right? And that's the thing. From inside, that perception's real. And that's, I'm not going to deny that. There are people on the Discord or people who shoot us emails. Totally. Like, that's a valid feeling that that challenge seems insurmountable. But that's just your perspective, right? And if I'm able to look from an outside observer where I don't have, whatever internal dialogues they're having, it's like, no, this is if I'm being pragmatic, it's pretty simple, not necessarily easy, but it's pretty simple. So let's give it a shot. And that's where I think people get tripped up. I think there's a couple things there. I think one is a pride issue. I think they feel like I should be able to do this. And like I said, one of the nice things about what we're doing, kind of beta testing this Hammer 90, like, we all looked in the mirror and we're like, we should have been able to do this, but we didn't. Like, here we are. We're all a little bit heavier than we want to be. And just admitting that, and no emotional attachment to that. Like, okay, like, I fucked up. Like, now I have this other group of people to lean on to help me with this. That's, I think, the necessary first step that a lot of people don't want to kind of approach, because they feel shame, like they should have been able to do it. And it's like, man, like, all those emotions, I get that you feel that, but they don't help. Like, that's the thing. They're not going to help move the needle. Like, feeling bad, feeling like you let yourself down, that's not progressive. But also, the beauty of having a coach is like, hey, like, that doesn't matter to us. Like, because on the flip side, I have another client, Joe, who's actually trying to do the other opposite. He's trying to gain weight. So Joe has a super stressful job, has two young kids, and then has had some health issues that have just made it hard for him to gain weight. And for him, again, it's like a bandwidth thing. Like, he and I have been working together off and on for like 7 years. And really, when he and I work together, it's because life has gotten so busy that he just needs kind of like somebody else to figure out the problem or figure out the solutions. Cause it's like, hey man, I just don't have the bandwidth. And that's the beauty of turning to somebody else. And with GLP-1s, you don't get that. There's no process there, right? You don't free up bandwidth. You just put a bandaid on the solution. Or bandaid on the injury as a solution for some people, right? Again, some people who have hundreds of pounds to lose or who have tried everything, absolutely makes sense. But for those individuals who are, kind of microdosing a little bit just to help with those like stubborn 10, 15, 20 pounds, I get it. I'm not here to tell you that you're doing it wrong. I just feel like there's more sustainable outcomes from trying other things, behavior-based, right?
I agree. I think for everybody that's going to, try to get into any form of medication like this, I mean, because it's an interesting classification of medication. So if you think about medications, treat pathology, right? So I'm a type 1 diabetic. I need insulin, right? So which is kind of fascinating in terms of obesity. I mean, now there's been, for a long time, obesity was viewed as more of like a social construct, right? Like, I don't feel good about myself. I'm heavy. But then we've realized that with the decline of American health and the rise of pharmaceuticals and just like, the fact that like 60-70% of this country is overweight, now what they're doing is they're classifying obesity as, pathology and disease and a sickness and something that needs to be dealt with. And the problem is that like, unlike a lot of like other diseases, like let's say it be type 1 diabetes or cancer or whatever, like the mental component is not necessarily something at play. Like, I have uncontrollable eating and food noise in here, and I'm basically trying to manage this, caveman monkey brain. And, for the entirety of our existence, we've been resource starved. So the brain works in such a way to like click us on so that we're going out and accumulating resources so that we can live through famine and whatnot. But now all of a sudden, where we live in a world of abundance, which we, like I said, we probably have never lived in this much of abundance, our original programming is failing us. So now you have people that are heavy, and we also have easy access to food and super hyper palatable food, and a bunch of foods that are extremely calorically dense. And like, you know, I would say light on nutrition, high on flavor and calories, right? And and they also figured out that when you couple sugar and fat, you create this
delicious.
Oh my God, like icing, like cupcakes, like donuts. I mean, bear claws, anything where you can mix sugar and fat, you're going to have a home run. So we have, you know, a consumer-based model creating hyper-palatable foods for people that don't have the foundational things in place. And, you know, now we're in a situation where, you know, sickness and illness, and like we said, the large cause mortality for this country is obesity. We have a hell of a problem. So now they've classified this and been like, all right, this is an issue. So now all of a sudden they have to come up with a medication to fix it. And now we're with the GLP-1s, which are working very, very well for a lot of people in terms of making them, you know, in a simple term, less fat. And the issue comes down to what happens if you want to stop taking the drugs? What happens if you can't get the drugs? Or just what if, like, you don't have this safety rail around you? I feel that for most people, if they did the work, they worked with the nutrition coach, they understood, like, hey, these are, even though these desires are real to me, they're not a real thing. Like, you can overcome these, yeah. Putting stuff in place, like we said, you know, building a big aerobic base, lifting weights, like doing all of the ancillary things more so than just taking a shot and hoping that the weight just sheds off because you can't eat. Like, that isn't sustainable for life and longevity and health and all the other things. You might be a thinner version, but you're going to be a, you know, a bag of sticking bones. And I really recommend that people don't go into this lightly. And the problem is that the doctors that prescribe it do not understand nutritional intervention. They don't understand strength training. They don't understand muscle and hypertrophy and all these other things. And if you have those, or you have somebody in your back pocket that understands those, and can say, hey, you know what? Like, if you're going to do this, don't try to get there in 6 weeks. Try to get there in like six months. That, like, you know, the turtle in the hare. You know, I know you can take a massive dose and you can probably make a large life change in a short amount of time. But the problem is that even though you're taking these, muscle is still coming on at a certain rate and requires nutrients and some other things in play. So I think that there's more to it than just like dude with zany glasses, you know. A lot of personality and a great tan telling you everybody should be on this stuff forever. I think it goes a little bit deeper, and being able to put the root behavioral process at the forefront, getting the good habits, getting with a coach. And then if you decide to pull that lever, I think you're going to be so much farther ahead.
Yeah. And I mean, there's, again, there's benefit to doing hard things, but I don't want to make it seem like everybody has to suffer. You know, we were kind of saying like, oh, we're suffering through this hunger and stuff, but that's kind of tongue in cheek.
Yeah, right.
Like if that's as tough of a life that we have to live as being hungry, like, cool, that's fine. But I think, again, going back to the idea that maybe people will feel a little bit of shame in this, that like, oh, I shouldn't have, like, I did this myself, I feel shameful or whatever. I think they also feel like, you know, it's almost like the old Catholic way of like, now I need to suffer my way out of this.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't need to. Like, honestly, it's all about like what you said, framing it. If you, you know, the easy math I like to talk to people when they shoot me email about nutrition, it's like, okay, let's say you gained 10 pounds this year. Over the course of 12 months, you just kind of didn't pay attention to stuff. You gained 10 pounds, not the end of the world. But let's say you've been doing that for 8 years now. Well, now you're 80 pounds overweight, right? Took 8 years to get there. But then, like you said, they think like, oh, in 6 weeks, I want to come back down. And it's like, physiologically, that's not sustainable. You could, there's ways we could do it, but it's just not going to be sustainable. And I think that's where my question always goes back with the GLP-1s is like, they absolutely work. And for some people, that rapid weight loss, because they have so much, absolutely, that's what they need. But what about, like you said, people get on it. What's it going to look like 5 years from now? Like, we don't have that data. Like, the data that we have right now are in clinical trials, and we just kind of know the initial stuff. We don't have this longitudinal data. You know, is it something where it loses its potency like most pharmaceuticals? So then you have to increase the dose, and that becomes more of a financial burden, and then more of a, and you know, then you're bound to it. It's like, oh, now this costs too much, but I have to have it. And so there's a lot of things in there.
Well, they were pretty cheap to begin with. And I think that's what was fascinating was like when I first looked at it, it was very reasonable from the doctor. And then I want to say somebody I talked to recently, it was like they jacked the prices through, and it was like $2,000 for whatever their dosage. And I don't know how long that was, but they were like, you know, it was a couple hundred and it went to thousands. So,
Because that's the insurance companies,
yeah,
right? That's how that game is played. And because what, insulin costs like a dollar to make,
but yeah, it's fucking expensive. You
know? So those are the questions where it's like, I don't know if the best thing, if you are somebody who doesn't absolutely need it, I don't know if the best move right now is to start using it without trying to do everything else. I have another client. I'll keep his name out because I don't know if he would want to, but we tried everything. He lost some decent weight, but then was just struggling to keep it off. And we tried again. And so now he's on a GLP-1 and he's crushing it. And it's like, yeah, dude, like you gave it like a 2-year shot. Like we really were trying everything, but his job is insane. He's got a little one, you know, there's a lot of these common factors where it's just like, you don't have the bandwidth and it's just struggling. And so he's on it and he's crushing it. It's like, good. Like, cause in the end, like, what do we want? We want people to be healthy, right? We want people to be where they can be. But I just feel like a more metered approach instead of jumping into the deep end right away would be more sustainable in a whole bunch of different ways. Not just physically sustainable, but you know, the mental resilience and things like that. I think there's a lot to be said there.
I agree.
So that's my concern.
Yeah. So because I've never taken the GLP-1s, I don't really know, exactly how, I mean, I've talked ad nauseum about it with Doc Parsley and Jay and different people. You know, I've done a lot of consults and worked with people that are on it. The one thing that's really fascinating to me is like the behavioral change that, they're kind of a game changer when it comes to obviously like appetite, but also reducing that food noise. How does that benefit, or, you know, think about like somebody that's trying to put on muscle, just because I watched a few videos where like, you know, bodybuilders have been using it, but those guys are also taking a ton of drugs on the other side. So now you're talking about taking this with hormone replacement. I wonder how like the protein needs, and more importantly, like just the, I guess you could say like total caloric load needed to maintain muscle. I think that's like an interesting piece because people don't really know. Like, I mean, obviously if you're trying to get as lean as possible, and you know, we've said this for years on the podcast, that if you can eat in caloric restriction, lift heavy weights, and eat enough protein to be able to maintain body composition, you can lose fat, gain muscle, all in this kind of negative calorie deficiency. You know, there was an idea that you're going to have to like be in a caloric surplus to put on muscle. But what I have found is that if you're doing your aerobic work, you're eating enough protein and you're, you know, still lifting weights, that you can actually put on muscle in a caloric deficit. Now it's not going to be at the same rate, but you can, at the very least, you can maintain all your muscle. The issue comes down to, for a lot of people, and we've run into this over the years, where people want to do a cut. And all of a sudden they do a cut and they didn't spend the inordinate amount of time putting on muscle, that all of a sudden they cut, and I actually think they look worse. Where, you know, we've seen this where guys are like 180 pounds, and if I could just get down to 165, I'd be shredded, and they get to 165, and you're like, dude, you looked better at 180.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking of a couple clients we've had in the past where that was exactly it, where it's like, hey, you can tell you're carrying some fat, so let's lean out. And you know, one of them we dropped from, like 175 to 150, and we couldn't see any abs. And it's like, hey man, hate to tell you, you just don't have, you know, the hardware underneath there to really drive this thing. And so, you know, we talk about, what do they call it? Like Wegovy face and like GLP or Ozempic face or whatever.
Yeah.
I would venture to say, I would guess, just based off of the typical American lifestyle, most people are under-muscled.
Yeah.
They don't have significant skeletal muscle mounts. So then when they do the weight loss, great. There's the category of fat loss means less inflammation. Cool. But active skeletal muscle, contracting skeletal muscle, is also anti-inflammatory. So it's like, now we have to say, well, which would be better? Because we could drop all of this systemic inflammation from losing all this fat, but if we had more muscle, we could constantly be dosing an anti-inflammatory response every time you contract that. So if you're lifting heavy weights 6 days a week and you're starting to build muscle, you know, it's like, how lean do you need to get? How much fat do you need to drop? And that's where, you know, one of the things he was talking about, because what he said, he was like 53 and he wants to get down to like 7% body fat.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. Now, again, he said he was hormonally optimized and things like that. So it's a different game. But for the average person who's not taking some kind of HRT, TRT or sure. something like that, when you start getting there, it's your immune system has difficulty. Yeah. And I thought that was something else interesting. He said when he did his panels, he had no inflammation. That means your immune system is failing. Because
yeah, you need some inflammation. I took that more as hyperbole.
I assume so. But that
he kept calling.
See that
he kept calling them GLP-3s.
Yeah,
which he said that, and it was the first time I'd ever heard it. And I looked it up, and the classification is GLP-1. They're just changing the classification or they're changing the name because the FDA, and they're saying three because it's a three-way pathway, whereas it's still GLP-1s. Yeah. And I think Gavin C on the Discord brought that up, and I just had never heard that when he said GLP-3s. I was just kind of assumed that like maybe the fact that they're kind of labeling the 1, 2, or 3 based on how many pathways. Side note for me, I know I'm getting super lean when all of a sudden I get these like cheekbones. Mm-hmm. Like all of a sudden I get these like cherry, like where all of a sudden like my cheek starts to get kind of sunk, and I start getting these like high cheekbones, which just makes me supermodel, these high cheekbones. But like I can always tell when I get down in that like approaching 10% body fat, like all of a sudden these like kind of light up. And I went back and was looking at some pictures from 22 Jack Street and some of the progress stuff, and there was a point where all of a sudden my face was smooth, and then my cheeks sunk in a little bit, and I started getting these like high cheekbone kind of cherries, and I was like, oh yeah, I remember, this is where this comes from.
Yeah, well, but that going back to all of that idea of being sub 10, I just know, from my time as a collegiate swimmer, walking around at that, like, and training hard. 'Cause that's the thing, I guess if you're sub 10 and you modify your training, so you're not overreaching over training, maybe it's manageable. But if you're somebody who has a lifestyle where you train hard 5-6 days a week and you get down there without messing with your chemistry, it's really hard to stay healthy. Upper respiratory infections creep up, little nagging injuries creep up because your body is running on minimal resources. And so, it has to say, like, do we want the brain to function well? Do we want the immune system to function well? And it has to start mitigating its losses. And so, I don't know. It's, there's the camp that he's in, and hey, to his credit, he does look great for a 53-year-old dude.
He looks
great for like a 35-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he looks good, but he was he wasn't hiding that he was really leveraging the chemistry,
sure,
which is cool if that's what you want to do. But I don't think I don't think many people have the financial means to do all of that. Right. And then it's also, as he mentioned, and I do want to credit him for this as well, he did say multiple times, it's like, no, he's not eating like an asshole. Like everything else still has to be dialed. He's lifting weights 4 times a week, doing cardio on the other days. He's eating well. So it's like those habits are still there. And so that's why I feel like building them beforehand is important, because you need them regardless. And I know you can build them in concert, and yeah, Gavin mentioned that on the Discord, and I'm not saying you can't, but I just think I don't know if severity is the right word, but the order of extremity, is that a word? The extreme nature of jumping into the pharmaceuticals right away, I don't know if that's necessarily the way to go if you're going to need these habits and stuff to be in place no matter what.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Okay. So the other piece that he was big on too was the sugar diet. And yeah, when he shot that thing up, I was, made that joke about Mark Bell playing, turning heel, but, we did the deep dive on the FF, T25.
Yeah. That's a Waldman question.
He's the one, he actually wrote a whole breakup that we'll put in the show notes on it for the Everyday Athlete on SI. So let me pull it up. Oh yeah, there it is. FGF 21. So it's a fibroblast growth factor 21. And just to give you guys a little bit of background, it's a hormone produced mostly by the liver, and it plays a major role in energy balance. It helps regulate how your body uses fat and glucose, especially with times of stress like fasting, cold exposure, or intense exercise. Think of it as a metabolic traffic cop. When fuel is low or demands are high, FGF21 signals the body to conserve energy, fat, and improve mitochondrial efficiency, all things that matter for performance and recovery. So what he was talking about is that when you hit the body with high amounts of fructose in a low protein, no fat environment, that the body releases this FGF21 and you can shed a ton of body fat in a short period of time. So what he actually recommended for the listeners, recommended for me, and kind of said, hey, if you want to cut some body fat really quickly, here's something that you could do. And he did not necessarily forward me the diet. He forwarded me a couple Twitter links that kind of broke down what he was talking about. But it was Monday, Tuesday, consume nothing but fructose and honey and sugar and fruit juice and all the stuff. And then on the third day, you eat that all day. And then at night you have some like really lean protein that has no fat. And I think he recommended like scallops and shrimp or maybe some whitefish. And then you go back on the sugar diet for Thursday and Friday. Saturday, you can eat kind of normal, you know, with like some steaks and whatever. And then Friday you just fast. And I'm kind of bastardizing a little bit, but that's kind of what he recommended. And he thought for like 2 weeks, you know, I mean, that somebody could drop, you know, let's say 3 to 5% body fat. So it might be something for a cut in this, but you know, Mark Bell's living his life like this. And, you know, I don't know, you know, what the long-term effects. I actually had a conversation with Dr. Sabine Hazen, who's been on the podcast, Progena Biome. We were on a call yesterday on something not related to this. But I asked her a little bit about people that are on high sugar diets and, more importantly, people that were like fruititarians. So I asked her, I'm like, hey, have you ever had anybody who was just ate like fruit and, very little meat, like very little protein, just all fruit? And she's like, I've had some fruititarians on there. And their markers for aging are extremely accelerated. She's like, sugar accelerates aging at a very interesting rate. And then when I asked her about the FGF21, she's like, yeah, I don't think that blocks the aging effect. And then I kind of pitched her and I was like, well, what if I just did this for like 2 weeks, or if it was a short thing? And she's like, well, I mean, you wouldn't know unless you did, you know, typical, you know, her response is, you know, unless you did some stool samples, we wouldn't really know the effect. But she's like, there's probably never been an outcome where somebody ate like this that resulted in health. And so I did a big search yesterday, and the amount of people who were raw fruitarians who have gotten themselves in some really bad health issues.
Yeah.
Like they've had people that have died. I mean, like it's there's, I think it was the guy, it was like 49 bananas
Durian Rider, 30 bananas a day. And I know that because I was in that cult for a while.
So tell us about it. That's what I'm trying to get to, because I know. So I'm trying to like hand this thing over. But, you know, for somebody who's done this volume, and I was almost wondering if it was like an alcoholic going back to the bar where, you know, you were in this. And I know from our conversations, you're like, yeah, I was a little wacky.
Yeah. I mean, that's so we have to put in context. I was 23, so fresh out of undergrad. I had just broken my leg at officer candidate school. So I was kind of like, damn the man. Cause, that was a waiver I couldn't get back in from. So, my mindset was a little bit anti-authoritarian at the time, but, and I was also pursuing triathlon as a sport. So this is where, when I think about it, this is my gap. I wasn't lifting weights when I did it. I was just doing insane amount of volume on the swim, bike, run. Now, doing it, some of the stuff that Mark and Jay were saying, I don't disagree with. I had tons of energy. I think, you know, I was doing probably 12 to 14,000 meters in the pool a week. I was probably running 50 miles a week, and I was on the bike, depending on what time of year it was, I was on the bike 120 to 200 miles a week, right? So I was doing a ton because I didn't have anything else going on. And I had plenty of energy for that. But the majority of that work was not high intensity work. I mean, whatever you want to call it, zone two or whatever, that was probably 80% of it was just low intensity. So I had plenty of energy, but I also wasn't testing my red line very often. So that was, I mean, I'm full agreement with that. Where I think it gets tricky though, is I had a ton of energy, but I wasn't doing much else. I was working a paper route and I worked at a pizza place. And otherwise I was sleeping. And so it's like, I might've had enough energy to do my exercise and do my stuff, but I was probably sleeping 10, 11 hours a day. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's tough to say if it's really like this metabolism booster in it. And when he mentioned that, I also thought like, well, is that really what we want? Like, is that the goal? Because as you know, you're intimately aware with one of the things that spikes metabolism the most is cancer, yeah. Right? A spiked metabolism isn't necessarily always a good thing. But in terms of the actual doing it long-term, 2 weeks, yeah, I think it's like, okay, I'm on a food vacation, but long-term things that people don't realize, again, the whole thing was like 30 bananas a day. So I was eating like a typical day was I would wake up, I would eat like a watermelon for breakfast. I would eat like a bag or two of, like some kind of citrus, throughout the day. So like blood oranges were kind of my jam. Ate a handful of kiwis, but then I would also have like 30 bananas a day. And the whole thing was like, there's like, I can't remember a gram of protein in banana. So then you get 30 grams of protein and that's all you need. They're very like anti-protein, in that group, but there's a serious amount of flavor fatigue. And Jay kind of brought this up, a bit about how it gets boring. And it's not just that it gets boring. It's a flavor and a lack of diverse textures that made eating it was a chore to eat as many calories as I needed to do what I needed to do. That was, I mean, it was worse than any bulk I've ever done, right? Because when you're bulking, it's just like, oh, I'm shoveling food down my mouth, but at least you're getting a varied texture, varied flavor profile. Here I'm shoving fruit flavored soft textures down my mouth. And it just became, I don't know. It was too difficult to do. But then also, you know, he had mentioned like the avoiding the candy because it's bad for your teeth or whatever. I'm not so sure that just eating fruit is necessarily good for your teeth. And I think about this a lot because that was now, again, to put this in context, I grew up somewhere that we didn't have fluoride in the water. So however you feel about that, but I was also a swimmer for a very long time and I was still swimming. So it could be that I just had a massive amount of chlorine in my teeth. But during this time, my oral health started tanking as well. And meaning like just started getting cavities in between my teeth and things like that at like a pretty alarming rate. And so again, my understanding of how oral health works is cavities are the result of bacteria, and bacteria are anaerobic, and anaerobic organisms feed off of sugar. So if you have sugar, you know, I wasn't brushing my teeth after every meal. I'd brush my teeth in the morning, brush my teeth at night, but I was eating constantly throughout the day, sugary foods. Granted it was fructose, but you know,
fructose is still sugar.
Yeah. And yeah. So it's like, I don't know if some of these things I think are still there. So I mean, as somebody who did that, just didn't do the lifting weights and I didn't do the one day of protein back in, I did it for like 12 months and then like, it just wasn't sustainable. And now I look back and some of the people that I was friends with in that community, they have all since moved on. And even Durian Ryder himself, who's like the head of this 30 bananas a day movement, has softened on quite a bit of the things as well. So, I don't know. Now, if the end result is lean, I was absolutely the leanest I've ever been. Hmm. I don't know if that was a product of doing all that volume, product of the diet, but I was probably walking around 6-7% body fat. But
you also couldn't fight your way out of a paper bag.
Yeah. I mean, if you would have asked me to deadlift my body weight, I probably would have snapped my spine. So,
Well, my son's a type 1 diabetic. And the way that you treat lows as a type 1 is with glucose tabs. Mm-hmm. And so he might on a good day have no glucose tabs, and on a bad day he might have six. And he has to suck on the glucose tabs because all of the mechanisms for blood sugar are actually in the mouth.
Yeah, the amylase.
Yeah, right? and there's receptors in the back, so he has to suck on these glucose. And if he doesn't go and brush his teeth, and we found this out the hard way because we went to the doctor and they were like, "Fuck, dude!" Like, so now after each glucose tab, he has to go in there and either water pick or brush. And or go in there and gargle with something. So it's definitely an issue. And then there's also a pretty fascinating piece of research that I don't have in front of me right now that came out of the UK that was observing what they call de-evolution. So in the UK, they were observing what they felt was the first signs of us de-evolving based upon the strength of our teeth, the jaw structure, the nose, the cavities. I mean, you always see those pictures where they show hunter-gatherers or the early hominids or even Neanderthals, let's say. And like the skulls are wide, the noses are wide, they have much better breathing postures, the jaws are more defined, the teeth are more defined. So there's this idea, or not an idea, but really just historically, we were much more able to, chew tougher things, right? So you think about, less cooking, less processing, just, more robust. And that, the body responds to stress. So you're chewing, much more tough things. I mean, they probably didn't have any, I know they didn't have any way to store meat. So they probably either had to smoke it or eat it, or eat it a little bit once it gets a little gamey. And, if you've ever, cooked a steak or ever looked at a steak that sat out a little too long, it definitely gets pretty hard, right? So this de-evolution deal, this study came out, I think, in the UK where they were observing it. But one of the things, obviously the lack of vitamin D, but soft palatable foods. So if the majority of the foods that you're eating are soft palatable foods like a baby, your jaw is going to not need the same robustness and strength that you need. And you're going to see a decrease in the jaw muscles. So one of my contentions with something like this is if I'm just eating bananas, drinking fruit juice, and maybe the most difficult thing that I'm chewing all day is an apple, we're not probably doing enough to continue to exercise our teeth and keep our jaws strong.
Well, and something else, I'd be interested to know exactly what Mark Bell's doing, because he has made it like a long-term thing. But I know, so when I came off of the 811 diet, the very first thing, I was living in Minneapolis at the time, and Minneapolis, kind of a local food thing there, is called the Juicy Lucy, and it's two burger patties and they put the cheese inside, so it's like a stuffed hamburger or a stuffed cheeseburger. And so me and my buddies went, my buddies, who none of them were raw vegan, and they all thought I was insane for being raw vegan. They're like, yeah, dude, welcome back to they're like, welcome back to normalcy. We went out and we got some Juicy Lucy's, and so I had one, and so it's whatever, like 8 ounces of beef and a slice of cheddar cheese. And I thought I had to go to the hospital that night. Like, I was like the worst food poisoning I've ever had. Like, I thought literally like I'm dying right now. Now these were all my college buddies and they're all like, whatever, tough it up. They didn't take me, but, I probably lost like 10 pounds that night, just from my body. What I assume is my body just didn't know how to process complex proteins anymore, animal proteins. And so,
or the gut bacteria that you needed to process this. I mean, this goes back to Dr. Hazen, that if you don't feed the bacteria in your gut, the bacteria tend to leave because they need to be fed. So people that are very restrictive within their diets end up developing a certain signature. Now, that signature can be bad or good. So when I went through her gut testing, the signature that I had developed is actually positive for me. So her recommendation was like, keep doing what you're doing. You probably don't need as many vegetables. So there was something that she saw in there where she's like, if you do eat your vegetables, make sure you're scrubbing them and soaking them. But she's like, you probably don't need to eat kale and some of those other things. So when I told her, I do like to eat some fruit and post-workout, and kind of went into it, she's like, whatever you're doing, the only thing I just don't want you to do is, a bunch of raw fruit or raw vegetables or whatnot. So, you know, we do eat those sweet peppers. So when I do, I really scrub the shit out of them and eat those. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you know, her other recommendation was that I needed to have more dairy back in my system. So yeah. I had kind of, because of the paleo thing, I kind of got away from this idea of dairy. You know, when I originally got into paleo, I was pitching a paleo diet with dairy, and Lauren Cordain like wanted to fight me about it. And and then it's funny, years later, we go and meet Dr. Sabine, and she's like, you know, you need to put dairy back in. I need to have some yogurt, you know, with bifidobacteria in it. I want you to drink a little raw milk. I want you to put a little raw cream in your coffee. I mean, like, I'd like to have you be able to try to get this over the course of the day. And that should definitely improve upon your bifidobacteria and some of your microbiome. And I'm like, well, is this universal for everybody? She's like, no, everybody's microbiome is the same. All I can do is look at yours and give you feedback on how to improve upon it. I can't give you a blueprint to give to everybody.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was a pretty fascinating deal. I mean, especially when you get into, like, you know, cancer and some of these other things, like, and I, you know, we had her on the podcast discussing this, but, you know, low gut diversity, and gut diversity comes from, you know, you're either destroying gut diversity through lifestyle or things that you're doing, whether it be, you know, I don't know, methylene blue or, you know, different things that you're taking that are destroying gut diversity, or you have narrowly focused your diet so much to the point that the diversity happens just because the other bacteria aren't being fed.
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, somewhere else on the Discord this week, I made mention of this, and ultimately, like, my feelings on the sugar fast, I don't know. Again, I did the raw vegan thing, which is pretty much the same stuff, but overall, and this is a mantra that we've been saying for a long time, that don't be weird, but it's like, I think for most people, the goal should just be have as normal of a diet as possible. Not necessarily meaning the normal typical American diet, but like, just be like,
don't be normal. Weird.
Like, just, yeah, like, just eat some plants, eat some meat, eat some dairy. Like, it's, and because it, again, like we've talked about many times, metabolic flexibility, like the person who is probably going to do the best can handle the most varied diet.
Yeah. And that was Tom Inkledon. The healthiest people on the planet are the ones that can eat the most diverse diet. It's not the ones that do eat the most diverse diet, even though there's kind of like there's a little nuance in that statement. Not like the people that eat the most diverse diet, the people that can eat the most diverse diet, you know, the people that can eat a little bit of everything and never have any issues. I mean, if it's something that you can, you know, and like, you know, my wife, to some extent, like, there's only certain restaurants that we could go to. There's certain places that we can't, just for the fact that, you know, she has, you know, some stomach issues and has dealt with them for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing, is this is my problem with, it kind of part of the GLP-1s, kind of part of like the sugar fast and this whole realm, is like, it masks the fact that there are people who have actual issues that do need intervention like this. Right. And, you know, early in the CrossFit days, we saw a lot with gluten. So everybody was, I'm gluten intolerant. It's like, no, you just eat too much bread. Like, you don't know how to control your portion sizes. You're not gluten intolerant. You feel sick because you ate 7 donuts, right? But there are, in fact, people who do have gluten issues. There are, in fact, people who do have dairy issues. And again, going back to like Bree's article, I think she mentioned something in there about like, there is real medical treatment for that stuff, right? Like, seeking out someone like Dr. Sabine to get a scope on what is going on in your biome. Like, those are great steps to get there. But for the general population, most people, it's more, in my mind, it's mostly a case of, you just need to kind of hone in your calorie balance and introduce some normalcy and some regularity, right? And like you said, Dr. Inkledon says, you know, the people who live the longest can eat the most diverse. I don't eat a very diverse diet. Part of that's because we're in calorie restriction, so it's just easier for me to eat the same thing. But in general, like, I don't eat a lot of, for instance, a lot of pastas, right? But when we went out for my wife's birthday, I had no problem eating that pasta. I ate way more than I needed to, felt super full, but by the time we got home, felt okay, right? And what do I attribute that to? Well, I attribute that to, now I'm relatively lean. I have a decent amount of lean mass. And so my body's able to handle these one-off kind of stressful situations, right? Same thing with drinking. I don't drink a whole bunch, but we had a few drinks that night too. And I found that leaner, more lean mass, those drinks didn't affect me nearly as much as they did or would have a few months ago, right? And so it's all intertwined. It's about just kind of pushing the global health in one way. And there's pharmacological means for that. There's diets like the sugar fast or restrictive diets that can get you there. But ultimately, and Jay even said it in the podcast, ultimately, at some point, you should just go back to kind of this omnivore thing. And we saw, I don't know if you saw, I can't remember. Sullivan sent it to me. So he probably sent it to you also. But now Paul Saladino's out there telling us what type of bread to eat. And it's like, hold on, carnivore MD. Like you're the bread guy now? But that's the thing. Everybody drifts back to this kind of home base of omnivore, calorie balance, you know, diet. And that's what we are as humans. We're omnivores and we are abiding by the law of thermodynamics. So it's simple.
Well, one of my takes, and this was just purely with, Paul Saladino's kind of evolution of this deal. I think it has to do with vitamin D. I really do. So one of the things that we observed with Philippe and Victor and the guys is when they lived in Brazil and they're, you know, those guys live around the equator in San Luis and Fortaleza, the amount of carbohydrate that those guys eat is pretty wild. Like, you know, it's mm-hmm. like nothing for them to have 600-700 grams of carbohydrates in a day. You know, they eat a lot of like rice and beans. And there's just a lot of like yuca and just like, there's a lot of carb. And those guys were all pretty lean. And all of a sudden they moved to America. They don't nearly have the same level of exposure to sunlight. And that same mm-hmm. diet ended up making them kind of lunchy. So when we looked at hunter-gatherers, for example, like the people up in the Arctic Circle ate no carb. The people that were down, you know, the hunter-gatherers that were down on the equator, 60%, if not more, came from carbohydrates. So you look at like the Hadza, like fruit and different grubs and tubers, and just ate a ton of carbohydrate. And what they related it to was sun exposure. So I think what happened to Paul is, you know, when, you know, carnivore diet here in the US, he moves down to Costa Rica and gets a lot more sun. And next thing you know, he's out in the ocean every day and this. And I think you run into an issue where you need, and then he gets into fruit and honey and adding more and more of these things in. And he basically works back into this, like basically a paleo diet with some dairy.
Whole food omnivore diet.
Yeah. With sourdough, which, you know, has lactobacillus. So you're getting fermented foods in this. And he's basically eating the Power Athlete diet that we wrote many, many years ago, that if you go to Talk to Me, Johnny, and you put in, just tell me what to eat, and the Power Athlete diet comes up. That's exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, you know, honestly, like that's where, for the majority of my nutrition clients, that's just where we start too. It's just like, hey, let's, because again, we're like you mentioned, we're in a place where we have the choice. For centuries, we didn't have the choice of what food we could eat. Now we just happen to have the choices. And if we look historically, and this I know is a little bit of a fallacy as well. What is it? The fallacy of nature or whatever, but I think about all the time, I'm of Irish and Eastern European descent. Like, I don't like avocados. They don't sit well with me. And that's probably because I'm like the second generation in my entire bloodline that's ever been exposed to avocado, right? Like it just makes logical sense that there's something along those lines. So like you said, the Brazilians, for how many centuries did their ancestors get ample amount of vitamin D? So their physiology adapted to that. You pull them out of that environment. Well, that's not what their physiology is necessarily prepped for. And I think people kind of forget that, but there is a common denominator among all of these civilizations. Yeah, they ate regional foods, but the concept of some plants, some animal protein, like there were, to my knowledge, very few true vegetarian societies. And in terms of longevity, those ones that were there did not necessarily live that long. And again, that's why that, you know, the idea of like the fruit fast, that's a very first world problem. It's like, oh, I can choose to do that because we have access to it. But a lot of people, you know, if you were to go around the world and say, hey, I'm choosing not to eat meat at every meal, there would be a ton of civilizations that would look at you like, why would you choose that? You know, because they're dealing with all sorts of issues. So to me, it just makes sense. Don't be weird. Eat, you know, whole foods, some protein, some fruits, some veg, drink a little bit of dairy. It's pretty simple.
Yeah. I mean, it can't be that complicated.
It really can't, because again, we are the most advanced we've ever been as human race. So that means they were real dumb humanoids, whatever, centuries ago, and they still did it, right? It was just like, eat the food that's here. Like, don't overthink it.
Well, and you know, the idea of abundance versus deficit is interesting, because I mean, if you think, you had to grow your food, or you had to go out and hunt your food. I mean, there would be times of like, maybe the crops didn't come in, maybe you can't kill anything. So I think the idea of like a lack of abundance is probably what kept us pretty lean and pretty focused. And it also probably kept us hyper-focused on food. Whereas now with abundance, we have the ability to do things from AI to computers. I mean, when people are like, you know, how have we evolved so fast? I always go back to, if you don't have to worry about where your food is coming from, you got a lot more free time. Whereas if you have to feed yourself all day, every day, like that's going to be your hyper-focus, and you're not going to be able to go and do a lot of advancements.
Well, that's why the most, I was listening to a professor, some podcast professor was talking about this. I can't remember his name now. The most significant technological advancement in human history was the throwing spear. And that's why everything we work on now is called a project, as in a projectile, because the ability to throw a spear changed the food landscape for, you know, whatever Homo sapien or whatever ancient man that was. And that's what kind of kicked everything off, because if they weren't able to throw the spear, they weren't able to get the big game, at least as easily. And so that's what radically changed everything. So again, yeah, it's always been about food. Like that was, food was responsible for the most important thing that ever happened to us as a species. So, and now we don't have to worry about it. But that lack of worry turns into a mindless consumption. And then mindless consumption turns into overconsumption. And then we find ourselves where we are now.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. I think that's about everything. We definitely got into Hammer 90. We talked about the GLP-1s, what it means to be 16 weeks hungry, and then we talked about the sugar cut. So we'll just end on this. We gave some pros and cons and some reasons maybe not, but what do you think? Yes or no?
The thing I have to figure out is how I can convince my daughters when every night I'm trying to get them to eat, you know, like finish your meat and finish your, and I'm just over here smashing fruit. Like, how can I balance that hypocrisy?
I don't know. I mean, for my daughters, they won't notice. They're too hyper-focused on themselves.
They don't care about you anymore.
They don't give a shit. Like, yeah, there'll be a point where all of a sudden you're just like in the way. You're just that big dude that just happens to be lurking around, you know, now, like when they're little, like daddy's everything. But like now, well, our
4-year-old, she, because I weigh everything now, right? I'm weighing and measuring everything. And she asked why I do that. And I said, oh, because I'm trying to lose weight. So now every day at dinner, when I sit down, she says, oh, here's the fat man. It's like, okay. Like,
ouch.
That's the shame I need. So again, accountability from your entire family helps. You want to start the sugar diet this week?
Yeah. I mean, what do we have? We have 2 weeks left, right? So we'd have to probably start tomorrow.
We have 3 weeks left.
Oh, we do? Okay. So we have three weeks. So we could probably start Monday and do like, or we'd probably have to start maybe like Thursday or Friday and give it like 14 days. Cause I think it ends Friday.
Every diet starts on a Monday, John.
No. That's why I don't start diets on Monday. I like to start diets on like the midweek, and we're already at Tuesday. So it'd have to be like a Thursday.
Yeah, that would give me enough, because logistically I just need to figure out, because it's going to be like, let's see, I'm at like 1800 calories right now, so I'm going to need to figure out how to work 500 grams of carbs in a day, 400 grams of carbs, somewhere in there. So yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Signed, sealed, and delivered.
I'm warning you, I might go back to my anti-authoritarian ways and start reading Derek Johnson and send you some more wild stuff, wilder than what Sullivan sends you. So be prepared for that.
I can't believe it. It's crazy. So, all right. Well, Sugar Fest,
here we go.
We will keep you guys up to date. I'm sure as you listen to this, you'll hit us with questions. But if you got any more, you know where to find us, powerathletehq.com. You can hit us on social. And if you're in the training programs and in Discord, just basically tag at JDub and at Ben Skutnik, and we'll jump in there and answer. So signed, sealed, and delivered. You got it. You heard it here first. Power Athlete Radio. See you.
This episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market. We've built an online training business by partnering with Train Heroic to deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jack Street, Hammer, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training. And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best training tech in the business, head to trainheroic.com/powerathletehq. Hey there, Power Athlete Nation. Big shout out to all the heavy hitters who stuck around till the final whistle. If you've been soaking in the knowledge bombs and epic tales we've been dropping for free, here's your chance to be a game changer. Swing by klfi.com/powerathlete and toss a few bucks our way to keep the podcast fueled and firing on all cylinders. That's ko-fi.com/powerathlete. Your support makes a difference. See ya.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply, in-app only.